Hallo en welkom bij aflevering 161 van de Enonic Show. Wij leren van ondernemers en ondernemende mensen die bijzondere resultaten bereiken. Hoe ze hier gekomen zijn, wat ze doen, de strategie en hoe ze klanten krijgen. Mijn naam is Enno Hanink en ik deel mijn opgedane kennis, ervaringen en expertise met jou. Ik train en coach bedrijven bij het formuleren van een online strategie en de implementatie daarvan. Vandaag het gesprek met Mark Green. Engels, Amerikaanse coach. Mark E. Green is a strategic advisor and coach to mid-market CEOs and executive teams worldwide. Driven by relentless passion to liberate human potential, he has addressed, coached, and advised thousands of business leaders across a wide range of industries. Mark deeply believes every CEO has the ability to unlock more of their own potential and in turn to help their people to do the same. Mark has helped his clients overcome major obstacles, deal with tough decisions, and generate breakthrough results. His integrity, direct style, and powerful intuition accelerate team performance, distribution of decision-making, productivity, revenue, and profitability. More importantly, Mark's clients report significantly lower stress, reduced time consumed by the business, and vastly improved life balance. He is a core advisor to Gravitas Impact Premium Coaches, formerly known as Gazelles International, a mentor to coaches worldwide, and an active contributor to programs and content for the global ecosystem. In the introduction of the actual podcast, I talk about the first time we met with Mark, which was in New York City at a architecture firm, and it was the first time he gave the workshop for this book. It went really well. We experienced significant results from the workshop. For me, it was a good reason to invite Mark to the podcast and also to give an opportunity to talk about the book as well, of course. The book is due in beginning of September, so it's going to take a bit. But the conversation with Mark in the podcast was really interesting. And we go through the several points of the book, but we also talk about how he came to building his business in the way he's doing now. The small amount of clients he's helping in a way that he respects his own time and his business. For me, it was a pleasure to talk to him. So enjoy the conversation. Hope you get the greatest insights from Mark too. Let's get started.
Welkom in de Erno Hanning Show, de podcast waarin je alles leert over de online sales funnel. Met succesvolle ondernemers en experts, praktische tips en tools die je helpen voor meer resultaat online. Dan nu, jouw online sales funnel expert, Erno Hanning.
Wil jij weten wat de 11 winstoptimalisatie elementen zijn voor online marketing en verkoop? Vraag dan het gratis boekje aan. Dit doe je op winstoptimalisatieboekje.nl. De digitale versie krijg je helemaal gratis en voor het fysieke boekje betaal je alleen de verzendkosten. Vraag jouw boekje nu aan op winstoptimalisatieboekje.nl. Je leest het in één avond uit. winstoptimalisatieboekje.nl. Today, I am talking with a special guest and the good thing is that I need a short introduction to make sure you how special this is. Because we were at a mastermind meeting with Peter and Monique, my two mastermind buddies, in New York, and we had a whole week together, so it was a very intense week. But a part of this week was that we had, Peter was so kind to schedule a workshop with Mark. Mark Green had a mini workshop for us, which was a part of the book that he's about to release, and it was very intense. It was very deep. It was very good. It was a very nice workshop. And after the workshop, we actually went back to our apartment and we went deeper into the topics and tried to, you know, help each other on the points that we find were difficult or we couldn't answer very quickly or we challenged each other's answers. So without further ado, I have on the other end Mark Green from New York. Thank you, Mark, that you're here.
Thank you, Erno. It's great to be with you.
So you'll be releasing your book around September 2018. So hopefully, when you listen to this, the book is ready and you can buy it. And I think you should, because I've read the manuscript, which I cannot give free right now. But you should read the book, because if you are an entrepreneur, if you are a CEO of a company, if you have an important job, you have an important job in your life, he has a great book that helps you with actions and tasks to get clear on the points where you probably are not getting where you want to be right now. So how did you come up with the idea of the book?
So the idea of the book, it was a building thing for me over many, many years of living my own life and working in my own practice. And just over time, the evidence continued to build that there was something missing that was preventing me earlier in my career and preventing my clients more recently from being able to achieve the success that that they wanted. And what it was was the reason why I earlier on in my career was unable to really execute on the things that I already knew I should be doing, and I generally knew how to be doing them, as opposed to focusing on learning more things and learning more of the how to do those things. I'll give you an example. As a coach early in my practice, maybe 15 or 16 years ago, I had a very hard time asking direct questions of my clients. And I knew how to ask direct questions. I knew I should be asking direct questions. And yet I was really unable to do it. And so it wasn't a matter of me deepening my learning of direct questions, the need to ask them or how to ask them. There was something missing that was preventing me from actually being able to ask them. And fast forward to the present, and I work with mid-market CEOs. Now my clients are CEOs and executives running 20 to 300 million US in turnover. And these CEOs have the same issue. They know they should have a clear strategy, a simple strategy. They even know how to do it. In fact, I coach them through that. But they're not able in all cases to actually live the strategy, make the choices that are necessary to abide by their strategy. And so here they knew what they needed to do. They were shown how to do it, and yet they weren't able to successfully enact their intentions. And it was the building of evidence over the years that led me to see very clearly that there was an element in the conversation that was not being had. And the premise of the book is that there's an awful lot of here's what you should do content out in the world. There's also an awful lot of here's how to do those things content out in the world. But there's very little practical applied content around here's why it's so hard to actually get these things done. And here's a set of tools that you can use to help you get out of your own way.
So I have already a couple of questions. So let's start with the questions you didn't dare to ask, these direct questions. Can you name one or two examples? What is a direct question for you?
Sure. A direct question to a CEO could be pointing out a contradiction. So I've had instances where, and again, this is pretty common, frankly, where a CEO will say one thing, and about a minute and a half later in the conversation, they'll say something else. Those two things cannot coexist logically. And I stop them in their tracks and I say, which one is it? You can't have it both ways. You know, I'm hearing this and I'm hearing that. Which one is it? It's an ability to operate at a level of high confidence without regard for really, in my case, being liked by the other person, but rather appreciating that if I'm respected, I'm on solid ground.
And in the end, it probably is also true. If you're respected, you are also liked.
over. So it's interesting, not necessarily on a transactional basis. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I have plenty of clients who, you know, I may walk out of a meeting with them and I'm not their favorite. Okay. However, they like me very much and appreciate me over the long term of our relationship. So for example, I may not like my doctor, when he causes me pain, in a procedure that I have to have. I certainly respect him in that moment. However, the next day I like my doctor just fine.
Yeah. So, and you talked about you have a lot of businesses that you work for. How many years have you now been a coach in this area?
So I've been a coach with my own practice for about 15 years now. The last 9 or 10 have been in the current format that I'm using, which is essentially a monthly, quarterly, annual meeting rhythm with not just the CEO, but the entire executive team as a team.
Hmm. And that is your business is Performance Dynamics Group.
That is correct.
And how many clients do you have on a ongoing basis? How many clients do you have, for example, at the moment?
So at the moment, I have 11 clients, and my portfolio is considered full with between 10 to 12 clients. And it just depends on the timing and opportunity and the scope of the businesses at any given moment in time.
And does that mean that you, because it's 10 to 12 clients, it doesn't sound like a lot for many people that are listening. Does it mean that you're spending a lot of time with them, or do you just have a different time schedule?
So, Erno, if this was a video podcast, you would see me smiling at your question right now, which actually cuts right into the heart of my own business strategy. Which is to create lifestyle for myself. The short version of this is to have dramatic impact for my clients, but to be able to do it in a time profile that maximizes my lifestyle and my flexibility. And so, in fact, I see my clients, each client only once a month, and that's for a half day monthly or a full day quarterly through the year. And I have quite a bit of time on my hands, which enables me to make choices around living my life the way I want to live my life, also continuing to learn and grow and invest in myself. And now, most recently, literally the last year of my life, a lot of time was dedicated to the creation of the Activators model and the book and the tools.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of spending your time. Also, a very intense way of time. I know from personal experience as well. So you are very deliberate about how much time you spend with the client, and you have a lot of time where you can develop yourself and live your personal life. How did you came to that situation? What deliberate choices did you make to be able to do that?
Well, so I have a saying that I'm not sure how it will translate or not, but I say I eat my own dog food. And another way to say this might be I walk my own talk, or I take my own medicine. Okay. And when I started my practice in the current model, again, about 9 or 10 years ago, one of the puzzles that I set out to solve was how can I create a practice that creates incredible value for my clients and allows me the lifestyle and the time profile that I want. And it took me about 2 years to really work through the strategy of how I was going to do this. And by the way, a lot of the issue, of course, was myself in my own mind, which again gets back to the I knew what to do and I knew how to do it, but I was preventing myself from being able to do it. And so there was some of my own learning and development that occurred in this time as well. But it was putting that strategy in place that allowed me to be able to make the choices that I make. And in any great strategy, it's about saying no to a great many things. And so when you say make the choices, in my mind, I think make saying no to things. And you know, some of the no things that I say no to are the things that I think many other consultants and coaches say yes to because they're not as confident in their value. And what I mean by this is things like, so Mark, who will be taking notes and minutes during our meetings with you? And my answer is that's not me, that's you, the client, because it's your content, it's your information. There's a million little things that come up that for a practitioner, it becomes very easy to say yes to, that I am saying no to because it's very well aligned with my strategy. And before any of your listeners think, wow, he sounds very mean, or not a very good coach, I will tell you that it's about setting clear boundaries. And when you start to set clear boundaries, people really respect you for who you are, and it allows you to bring the highest possible value. And one of the indicators that I get that I'm doing the right things is when I'm in a room full of executives working with a client, and a topic comes up that is a bit of a diversion away from what we really should be spending our time on. Perhaps it's something lower level or something more tactical. And it's the moment when someone in the room looks up and says, hey, team, hang on a second. With Mark in the room, we should not be having this conversation because we need to have higher value conversations with Mark in the room to respect our ability to maximize return on his time. And that's very powerful to me, because that is an indicator that my clients are seeing me the same way that I am seeing myself.
Hmm. What were the two most important things? Because you said it involved 2 years of learning how to bring this into practice, and mostly it was your mindset and the way you do things. What were the two most important things that you changed for yourself?
So I'll list one internal and one external. I'll start with the external. So I had the benefit of meeting and spending time with Bob Bloom, who is the former CEO of Publicis USA, which is one of the great advertising agencies through the 1970s and 1980s here in the United States. And one of their early claims to fame is that they helped Herb Kelleher launch Southwest Airlines and do all of the marketing and branding in the early days around Southwest Airlines, which is a very, very well-known story here in the United States. And I got to spend some time with Bob Bloom after he wrote his book called Inside Advantage and really clarify my who. And by who, I mean my core customer. It was very insightful for me because, you know, I like most people, I tended to play it safe with how I describe my core customer, and really made it more inclusive than it should have been. And part of what Bob's process and a little bit of actual coaching from him, which I was extremely fortunate to receive, helped me nail that down in a very, very powerful way. And that's what enabled me to start saying no to the wrong kinds of CEOs, which allowed me to curate really a higher quality client set. So that was the external factor.
Hold on.
Yep, go ahead.
I'll also get the internal one, but first, because this is a very important point that I always talk about with my clients too, and it takes a while to really understand this point because I've learned from the session with the sessions with Vern Harnish, where yes. He talks about hyper specialization, mm-hmm. And I have used that term. I actually wrote a workbook around that term in Dutch because it's so important to be very, very clear who your client is. And use that in your conversation, in your communication, on your website, everywhere. And I love the way that you said it gave you the opportunity to say no to the wrong CEOs.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And we have fear around this. And by the way, this is one of getting into the book a little bit, but you know, in terms of dealing with fears, one of the fears in particular around core customer is the fear of missing out. We call that FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. It's you know, if I say no to the opportunity just on the left or just on the right of my core, I feel like I might be losing something. Okay, but what we don't realize is if it's only by saying no to those things that we can fulfill our greatest depth and value with who it is we want to say yes to.
Yeah.
And saying yes to a very particular profile begets more of the same profile. And that's exactly what wound up happening in my practice.
Okay, let's get to the internal one.
Sure. So I am a big Patrick Lencioni fan, in particular, all of his books, by the way, but in particular, a book called Getting Naked, which some of our listeners might not be very familiar with, because it's a book that's written specifically to consultants and coaches. And I mentioned earlier that you know, I had this issue about not being able to ask very hard, direct questions. And Getting Naked was the book that finally helped me see what I was giving up by not being able to do that. And that finally helped me articulate what my real issues were that were preventing it. And he has this concept in the book called Enter the Danger, which was very powerful to me and still is very powerful to me. And it's this idea that as a coach, if I'm unwilling to enter the danger, to say something that is unsettling or potentially dangerous, if you will, in terms of the relationship or controversial, okay, then I'm not adding any value. All I'm doing is repeating things that are already known, or, you know, kind of nibbling at the perimeter, okay, and not getting to anything core. And so, as I like to say, his book Getting Naked was the you know, the baseball bat to the head for me of finally realizing that this was a huge problem and starting to take the steps to overcome it.
I guess that also another point where you changed something, but I'm not sure, but I'm trying to verify now, is that you changed something in your pricing model.
Yes. Yes. That is true.
That he's reluctant to say yes to.
Well, I was just thinking about how you're asking the question, and the answer is yes. The way I would say it is I also assumed a very aggressive pricing posture because I felt like the value was there and the value was increasing, and therefore it was only right to have a very aggressive pricing posture. And again, this comes all around to my mindset, right? Around my value and my ability to overcome a set of fears that, you know, that I had around that.
And aggressive means high pricing.
Correct. High value, you know, high value, high price.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Is it how do you charge? Do you charge on a yearly basis? Do you charge on a result basis? You probably don't charge on an hourly basis.
No, certainly not. I charge an annual fee for my client rhythm. And because it really is an abstraction, the work that I do. It's not like there's any moment in any given day or meeting with a client where they sit back and say, ah, there's the value. It's a building kind of a thing, and there's value all the way through. And so I charge a flat annual fee, essentially. So the meter never runs. I'm never counting my time. And I like it that way, and my clients like it that way. And it's been working very, very well for everybody.
We were In New York, we were at a company, an architecture company, who is in the midst of changing from, you know, an architecture, a traditional architect, to a technology company. That was very impressive to see. And I guess that you are partly, or maybe mostly, responsible for that shift.
Yeah, I wouldn't say responsible for it, but I'm certainly helping them accelerate through the process. And, you know, this is the CEO who recently bought the firm, was a partner in the firm and recently bought the firm and now controls the firm, has a very, very inspirational vision for the kind of company that they want to become. And as you might imagine, taking an old school architectural firm and all of the thinking and entrenched process and mindset that entails, and turning it into a highly agile technology company that happens to be in the architecture field, is a very, very significant shift. And there are a lot of implications that they're working through, not just in terms of strategy, in terms of people, in terms of execution, and certainly in terms of their ability to generate cash.
Hmm. So I listened to another podcast with you, and you talked about your life purpose. And it is, as I understood it correctly, it is to liberate humans' potential.
Yes.
Is that still your life purpose?
Oh, I'm you know, so as you even mentioned that, I feel my whole body reacting to this term. It's the reason I do what I do. It's the reason I've chosen to write a book. It's the reason I have a second book in mind. It's the reason I want to begin to do speaking and workshops worldwide with my content. It's really about maximizing my impact and helping as many people as I can liberate more of their own potential.
Yeah, and these workshops, of course, will help you because just earlier this month, or last month, I should say, you had a workshop in Amsterdam, so internationally, with a group of 70 people, about 26 teams. So that's a lot of effect that you will have for these companies, of course. That was really amazing.
Yeah, and the real force multiplier for me is to be able to share my content and tools along with some form of certification program for other coaches and practitioners around the world so that they in turn can use my thinking and my content with their clients without the need for me to be present. And this is what puts me, again, my own trajectory into the realm of more of a thought leader, which is where I'm heading with all of this, as opposed to a practitioner.
Yes, great. That sounds amazing because it will give other coaches opportunity to use your knowledge and to help these businesses to do the same without you being actually there. So we talked about your life purpose, and you say it's still applicable. But how did you get to that? How did you find that out? What life situations happened that you figured this is it?
So I mentioned before that I eat my own dog food. And I take my own medicine. And years ago, I actually had engaged a coach to help me put some pieces together in my practice and in my life. This was in the very early stages of my business. And one of the exercises that we did together was a process to uncover my life's purpose. And it's actually in the book. And the exercise and the tool is now in the book. There's a life purpose tool in the book. Because what I found is that while some people will tell you, no, I have no idea what my life's purpose is, or they'll look at you like you're funny, or it's not something that they take seriously. Other people will answer the question in a fairly shallow way, right? Like my life's purpose is to build a great business or have a happy family or these things which sound good, but they're not very deep and meaningful. And what I found is that it's the ability to go through a very deliberate process to really dig down to what it is that connects deeply. And it's my why. That's the reason why I was ready for Bob Bloom and his coaching. That's the reason why I was ready for Pat Lencioni and his book, and being able to get over that and do the hard things I needed to do to fix my own head, right? It's the reason why I say and do what I do with my clients, and it's the reason, you know, why I'm writing the book, and all of these things is because it's in the pursuit of something that I know deeply within myself is my reason for being. And there can be no more powerful internal source of motivation than that. And I feel like everybody should have an opportunity to figure this out for themselves, because it might lead you to make different choices. And it will certainly lead you to a place where you feel more connected to what you're doing and what you're becoming as a human being.
Yeah. I feel that I'm at the similar place right now. So if it took you 10 years to move from there where you are now, I know I have still a lot of things to add out of me. And the other thing was that you say it might change the way you're doing things right now. And that is, of course, a lot of parts where your book is all about, right? You know you need to do some things, and you don't do them because of, you know, whatever is the important thing for you. So let's get into the activators of the book, because I think it's important to learn. By the way, this life purpose section where you find your life purpose, that is in part 3 of the book, if I'm correct.
It is.
Yeah. And do you think that you can do this on your own? Because you did it with a coach. Do you think you can do it on your own?
Yeah, you can, and I've written the process that way. The only caution is you can't rush through it. So the way the process is written, it's multi-steps, and you should take 1 week to do each step and really think about it. Although, as in all of these things, it's very useful if you can find a friend, or if you do have a coach, someone, and you can help facilitate each other through the process. It's very beneficial, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a coach.
Right, great. Okay, so there are 8 activators in your book, and of course, the special thing about the book is that they all talk about, like you said in the introduction, is about things that we know, the things that we know that we need to do, that we know how it works because we've read books about it. As you are a business owner, you probably have read a lot of books about how to do things, and but you're still not doing it. So. Activator number 1, tell us a bit about reducing fear.
Sure. So we all have fear, and a lot of it is genetically programmed. And there's been some really great research and writing on this over the years. What we do is there's 3 types of fear specifically that drive us: ego, scarcity, and existential fear of failure. And we deal with all 3 of those fears in this activator. And the idea is that as humans, fear tends to dominate as a factor in our decision making. And what that does from a business standpoint, from a business leadership standpoint, is it causes us to play things safe. It causes us to not take that extra little bit of risk, or to perhaps have the conversation that we need to have, or say or do the things that we need to do. And what this activator does is it really kind of points this out as the top thing. And we've got some tools that are designed essentially very deliberately to get us out of emotion and fight or flight reaction, which is our body's response to any type of fear, even in an office setting when your life is not in danger, and slow you down and force you to think logically. And the fear reduction tool is always the tool that I start with a group or a team or a workshop, because it's right in front of our faces. And I've had numerous people, even just halfway through the tool, you know, essentially look up, you know, with a light bulb over their head, and say, okay, I'm done. This is really stupid. I've let go of this fear. And what's happened is the tool has helped them see the fear for what it really is, and which is what it's designed to do, and help them see that it should be relatively easy to move past it and do what must be done.
Yeah, I think that when we were in your workshop, most of the attendees said that this part of the workshop had the most impact on them, because you made it with the tool so clear what the effects are of the fear, and then it becomes so obvious to you that the effects are so much less than what's in your mind actually.
Always. Always.
And that really amazed me.
Yeah. Yeah. And just so the listeners know, the activators and the tools are based on research, neuroscience and social science research that I've gone back to find what are the things that are going on in us that get in our way. And I've curated those things and really distilled them down into the activators and the tools, so that in the book I introduce conceptually a little bit of the research, but then really pivot to just use this tool. It's got it all baked into it, and you don't have to worry about all the research. You can just use the tool to gain the benefits of the research. And so I've made it very practical and simple that way, but I just wanted all the listeners to know that I didn't just make this stuff up, that each of these activators and the tools, in fact, are very heavily research-based, although the book and the tools themselves don't read like a textbook. It's a very practical guide.
Yeah, it's good that you clarify this, because I 100% agree with that, because the workshop was like that. It was very clear. It was, it had everything thoroughly researched. You have good basis, but also in the book, I see the same thing again. It's very clear that these tools are good because of the research that you've done and because of the backgrounds that you're using. So I don't want to use all the activators. Not that I will mention them, but I think that there is too much in there to get into this podcast. But motivator number two was inspiration, and there you go on talk about the purpose. And one of the things that I found very interesting there is the don't tell but show point we made there. So don't tell me what you're going to do, but show me that it is important to you.
Yes. Yeah. And we deal with inspiration as a motivator. That's the second activator, increase inspiration. We treat it either transactionally, which is knowing the why behind some decision or choice or action that we need to take, and then we treat it existentially around the concept of purpose, greater purpose, which we already talked about in terms of the life's purpose exercise, et cetera. And the idea here is always that it's much more powerful to be behaviorally aligned, to demonstrate that something is important, as opposed to just using the words. And one of the ways that I see this often with my clients is many clients have experience with core values as a concept, and they exist as a poster on the wall or a slogan on the website. Yet if you were to really go into the organization and follow the executive team around for a day or two, you would see that their behavior is not actually aligned to what they say the core values of the organization are. And then they wonder why the culture isn't working right. And yet the answer's right in front of them all along. It's because they're saying one thing, but behaving in a different way.
Hmm. Yes, yes. And I can imagine that this is one of the direct questions that you would be asking. You do this. You say this and you do that, so this is it contradicts each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in the bigger picture, this creates dissonance for us. And there's a whole section in the book around our duality, which is the idea that we feel one way, but we aspire to be something else. And it's as long as there's conflict there that it is exhausting for us to have to deal with that. And that's kind of the backdrop to the big why behind the book, is so that over time we can align those things. You might aspire to be a transformational CEO with this amazing legacy of what you've built, and yet on any given day of the week, you might feel like a failure or a fraud or a dirty salesman. And the problem is that any moment that you don't feel aligned with your aspiration, it's costing you much more than you think.
Yes. And I don't want to go to, but I'm going to motivator number three, because we could go on for this purpose and this doing the right thing and forever, if it was up to me. But the motivator number three is habits, and there is three activators connected to that part. And the activator number five is change your neighborhood. And it was funny in the book how the physical neighborhood, which your grandfather told you about, and the emotional neighborhood, the neighborhood with the people that you're around with, so that's more emotional, in my opinion, how they connected.
Yes. So my grandpa Ben, my mother's father, gave me real estate advice when I was buying my first house. And he said, "Mark, whatever you do, don't buy the most expensive house in the neighborhood, because there's only one way that the property values of all the other houses in the neighborhood will affect your property value over time." And at the time in my life, I was in my early 20s, ready to buy my first house. It was fabulous real estate advice. And I took it, and I did very well. And it wasn't until about a decade later where I was in a position professionally where I was in a coaching network that's different than the one I'm in now. And I had become one of the top performers in this network and mentor and teacher of others, that I realized that my grandpa Ben did not just give me real estate advice, because I, as a practitioner at that time, had become the most expensive house in my professional neighborhood. And in fact, the property value of the other people around me was limiting me. That was the moment that I used to switch my affiliation and frankly set myself up on the trajectory that I'm on right now in my practice. And I find this is true for all of us. We spend way more time than we should in neighborhoods that we've outgrown professionally. And for the CEOs who are in peer group or forum type organizations or in mastermind groups, I really challenge you to think about the neighborhood that you're in. Because my way of thinking about this is, if you're not scared and intimidated by the people who you're surrounded by, then you're probably not in the right neighborhood, because you're likely in a position where your growth is being limited by those around you. You are not being actively challenged by people who are significantly better than you are.
And I there's two things that come to mind, so I try not to forget both of them. So, but this is also is it the same through as it is for a management team, for example, in the company?
Yeah, it is true to an extent. So what I've found anecdotally is, when I come into work with a business, in many cases, as the leaders and the CEO put the pieces in place that's going to help them continue to scale and grow the business, it becomes clear that not everybody in leadership are the right people to get them where they need to go. And so I think there is an element of this on a management team that takes place as well. But more significantly, it's external for the CEO, because that's what's going to give them the impetus to do these things or have these thoughts or be challenged that they may not have the right people. You know, for example, a client who hires me as a coach is effectively changing their neighborhood just with that, because I will come in with a level of rigor and expectation that has never been there in the organization before, asking different questions and having different sets of expectations. And that is what's required to just continue to challenge people and raise the bar so they can grow and improve over time.
Right. And so you have partly answered my second point, because my second point was because I have a lot of questions. People ask me a lot of questions about a mastermind. I write about it sometimes. I talk about it that I'm in a mastermind. And they say, so how do I find the right people to get into the mastermind? And I tell them, you know, you should find people that are, you know, that are at the points where you want to be or have passed at points, so that you can grow.
Yeah.
But and the difficulty is that they bring up questions. Then they say, how can I get to these people? And how will these people accept me? Because I'm not at their level.
Yeah. And welcome to the voice in your head. And again, this is what this book is all about. There's an ego fear in what you just said, Erno. Okay. How are they going to accept me if I'm not at their level? That is an ego fear. Okay. Because it's a fear of judgment. It's a fear of being judged by another person. And it's that fear that's preventing the people who ask these questions from taking the steps necessary to reach out and connect. And the Change Your Neighborhood tool in Activators will help you do just that. And I'll come back, I'll make this point. I put together a dream. This is back to me walking my own talk or eating my own dog food. I put together a Change Your Neighborhood tool for myself in terms of business leaders worldwide who I would like to endorse my book, or who I would like to perhaps write the foreword to the book. And the number one choice that I had was somebody who's, I can't disclose who it is, but is somebody whose name you would recognize immediately as an absolute global brand in leadership and coaching. And I could have very easily said, how would this person ever return my call? How would this person ever think that, you know, that I'm worth their time? But because their name was at the top of my list, I tapped my network and sure enough received an introduction to this person. And at a minimum, I'm going to receive an endorsement for the book from this person. And it's a perfect example of the power of this tool and of thinking big, and not letting that voice in your head of fear prevent you from taking action on these things. Because, you know, the worst possible outcome would have been that this person would have politely said no or would have not returned my call. But I would never have had a chance if I didn't reach out in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, the point that I took from your previous answer was that you can actually just buy a new neighborhood by just hiring a coach.
Yes, that's another possibility for sure. But my point in all of this, though, is you don't have to spend money on any of these activators. You certainly can. And so I don't want to send the wrong message.
No. I didn't. That's the only thing you clarified. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But these are tools that you can use on your own. You just have to really be willing to challenge yourself. And it's this question, you know, am I the smartest person in the room usually? And, you know, are more people coming to me for answers than I have people to go to for answers? And it's when that equation starts to change that you need to change your neighborhood. Because one of the other things that we don't see when we hang out in the wrong neighborhood too long is that the people we're surrounded by project their fears onto us. So that if you're in the wrong neighborhood and you say, wow, I think I need to go have this really tough conversation with my number two executive, it's possible that people around you say, well, maybe you should wait. Maybe you should wait and see how it works out, you know? And they'll give you their own advice or experience share that comes from their framework and their fears and their hidden growth killers, as we say in the book. And you don't even realize that Whereas if you're are surrounded by people better than you, they would be pushing you to push yourself.
Right. So then we have activator number 7 and 8, and I think these are the two ones that are not easy for me, and there's work to do, work to be done. Activator number 7 is leverage your past, and activator number 8 is enjoy the journey. And enjoying the journey for me means, well, you need to enjoy the journey of the good moments, but also of the tough moments. And you talk about being in the moment there.
Yes.
And yes. I liked the method that you suggested there is because you had these great present-oriented activities that you could do, which it has listed in your book, which it's so simple, but it forces you to just let go of expectations of the future and think back of the past, but just be today, be in the moment.
Yeah. So Professor Emeritus Philip Zimbardo from Stanford University in California did an awful lot of research in his career on time perspectives, which is how we view the past, the present, and the future. And it was quite a bit of his research that all of this thinking was based on. And I find that many of us who are entrepreneurs are very future focused, which is a good thing, but in moderation, okay? But we're future focused at the expense of the present, right? So what does that mean? It means, well, we'll work till midnight because we see clearly where we want to be in the business in 3 years. And we see the connection that getting this proposal out or this piece of work done for a client or whatever it is, we'll work till midnight, but we'll miss putting our children to bed. And it's trading off the present, okay, for the pursuit of the future. And part of the idea here and part of what Zimbardo's research indicated is that there needs to be a different balance. We need to view the past in a certain way that we can maximize our benefit from it. We need to view the present in a certain way so that we can have joy and live our lives here. And we need to view the future in a certain way where we are future oriented and planning, but not so much that it prevents us from being here right now. And that's where this enjoy the journey activator comes from. And the tool that, it says go out and sing or go play on a swing set in a child's playground, or schedule something that's a new experience for you to learn. And it's a whole list of ideas of what you can do to schedule things in the present. The other thing that enjoying the journey is about is expecting the unexpected and enjoying that. So things don't always work out as we plan, as we all are aware of that. And when they don't work out as we plan, you may not realize it, but you have a choice. You have a choice of how you react. And if you are reacting in a way that celebrates the unexpected and looks to find the good in the unexpected, which, by the way, dovetails with some of Jim Collins' research on return on luck, which fascinates me and is also mentioned separately in the book. And I do a lot of work with my clients on that concept. But if you capitalize on the unexpected, it puts you in a very different place than if you react to the unexpected in a highly negative way, feeling sorry for yourself or looking at it as bad luck or something out of your control. It's very disempowering.
Yeah. For me, that closer relates to the Stoic philosophy.
Ha, I agree. I agree completely. And I'm a big fan of Ryan Holiday, and I receive and read the Daily Stoic. Email every day, which I would urge your listeners to evaluate and look at as well.
Yes. Okay, I will put a link in the show notes of that too, because I agree that is a great email that you want to read every day. There is so much more in the book that I wanted to talk to you about, but one thing I want to mention and make sure that you talk about think your way into being or being your way into thinking. And the second part is a faster way of learning or at least implementing things. And that was really fascinating for me.
Yes. So this is in the behavior change chapter about how do we actually change our behavior? And there's two ways fundamentally, think your way into being, which is sort of the, I think I can mode. We call these affirmations that we can create for ourselves and program our minds. And they work. They take time though, and a lot of discipline and focus. And it can be a way, a mechanism that you use to help yourself. And there's details in the book on that along with the tool. My preference, however, is to be your way into thinking, which is otherwise known as fake it until you make it. And it's this idea of just emulating the behaviors that you know must occur, with the notion that over time that will start to feel natural to you. And another to call back to my own challenge of not being able to ask direct questions, I've just started asking very direct questions. In other words, I pretended that I was a coach who was able to ask very direct questions, and it felt really uncomfortable. And I thought people were going to hang up on me, and I thought I was putting relationships at risk. But I saw other very, very successful coaches, my new neighborhood of coaches, were able to do this, and it seemed like their relationships were fantastic. And so I just sort of took that and assumed it would be true for me, and began just doing the behavior. And that's what ends up making the difference for us. And it invokes this concept of deliberate practice, which is another bit of research we cover. That's this combination of stretching ourselves into something new, intense repetition, and constant feedback that can then be used in combination to continue to stretch ourselves and get better at that thing, at this behavior. And this is really the fastest path to results.
Yes. I don't know what to say. I can just agree. There's one thing I want to learn a little bit more about, which is how you get clients, because I've been looking up information in preparation of this talk about you, and there is not a lot of information that I can find online of you. So online is my territory. That's what I do a lot. That's where I help people with. But that's not what you use to get clients. How do you get clients?
So I'm in a very fortunate place. It's another benefit of my business strategy. If I maintain a small portfolio of 10 to 12 clients, and every client commits to a full year of working with me, which is my business model at a time, and because my clients have to commit to a year to work with me, and because most of my clients renew because they get great value from my work, at any moment in time, I don't have much room for new clients. And the room that I do have is filled through word of mouth. So I'm in a very fortunate position. Now, this is going to change as I move into marketing the book and being more of a thought leader. There's going to be a new website for activators for the book that will be launched in the coming months. Although I do expect there's going to be a continued impact of word of mouth, which to me is feels right, because it's aligned with my purpose of helping people. And so I think there's something about that I like in terms of validation that I'm doing the things that I should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have just a few more questions, but it's a little bit different and also connected, because one of the things you talked about in your book is about things that happened in the past that made you stronger. So what is it that when you were in the moment, when you it seemed like a struggle, it seemed like a difficulty, it seemed like a failure, but afterwards it was the best learning event you had? What is one of those examples?
So let's see. Oh, okay. So I'm now working with organizations with several hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and very, very experienced leadership teams. And I went through this progression over the past couple of years where I moved from organizations that were still in my comfort zone, you know, maybe 50 to 75 million US with moderately experienced leadership teams, to organizations with now 200, 250, 300 million US in turnover that have very, very experienced leadership. And with each of those new clients that I was referred to, I would always have a conversation with my wife, Carrie, and I would say, you know, this referral really scares me because I wonder if I'm good enough. I wonder if I can operate at this level. And then I would say to her, which is exactly why I need to go get this client, which is exactly why I need to pursue this. And it's this, again, this idea of deliberate practice of continuing to stretch myself. And sure enough, I would win these clients and I would prepare diligently for the kickoff, although still with some trepidation, and have the kickoff meeting. And at the end of our first session, the CEO would say something like, this has been the most productive day or 2 days in some cases, at a strategic level in our business in as long back as I can remember. And so I'm not sure if I'm quite answering your question, but this is definitely something that I struggled with, that to a lesser extent I still struggle with, but I use it to my advantage now.
Yeah. You answered the question. That's good. And the second question that I have, so my last question, is if because you already mentioned a couple of books that you admire, that you work with, and you've of course read a lot of books in preparation of your own book, what is the book that has the most impact on you or that you gifted the most?
Oh boy, that's a hard question, because I refer books very situationally, Erno. I would tell you that there's actually two books by Robert Cialdini on persuasion that are absolute must reads for leaders. They're on these universal principles of persuasion. His first book is called Influence. And his second book is called Pre-Suasion, P-R-E, Suasion. Both are absolutely outstanding works on how our minds work and what kinds of things lead human beings to be persuaded or influenced.
Yes, they are also very scary books if you use all these aspects in your sales.
Well, they're also very scary books if you're a parent. There's a lot of stuff going on in our world today that is influencing us using these principles that we're not exactly aware of.
Agree. I don't want to forget to mention at least you have a section how to hire a coach on your website, which is an interesting six-point page on your website where you explain what is important if you hire a coach, which I think everybody should read. So if, of course, besides the book, people, when the book comes out, you should buy it and you should read it. And not just read it, you should do the assignments. Anyway, if people want to connect with you, if people want to find you, where can best they go? That's not very good English, but anyway.
It's good enough. It works. So the best way to reach me is through either my website or email. And the website, which I'm sure will be listed with the podcast, is www.performance and then a hyphen dynamics and then a .net. P-E-R-F-O-R-M-A-N-C-E hyphen D-Y-N-A-M-I-C-S .net, N-E-T. And my email address is mark.green, G-R-E-E-N, at, and then performance-dynamics.net.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for giving us some insight about how you got to where you are now, how you do your coaching, which is very different from most coaches that I talk to, and how you came to your book and explanation about the a couple of points in your book. So thank you very much, Mark.
Erno, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
So this was the great conversation with Mark. Dit was het gave gesprek met Mark. Je vindt de namen en links die we noemen in het artikel dat bij deze uitzending hoort. Ga daarvoor naar ernohanning.nl/show161. Denk je, nou, dit was een gaaf aflevering. Ik wil hier meer van. Ik wil automatisch afleveringen krijgen op mijn telefoon bijvoorbeeld. Met Apple Podcast of bijvoorbeeld Player FM op een Android telefoon. Ga dan naar jouw favoriete podcast app. Zoek de Erno Hanning Show op en abonneer. Heb je een vraag? Heb je een opmerking, reactie over deze aflevering met Mark Green? Mail me dan op podcast@ernohanning.nl. Ik hoor super graag van jou. Wil je Mark laten weten dat je het een gave aflevering vond? Wil je met Mark in contact komen? Stuur dan een berichtje via zijn website of zoek contact met hem via LinkedIn.
Vraag dan het gratis boekje aan. Dit doe je
op. Er zijn nogal Mark Greens op LinkedIn. Je zoekt voor Time for Change met voor het cijfer 4.
Voor het fysieke boek.
En ik kijk met spanning uit naar zijn boek. En het zou maar zo kunnen zijn dat we in september, nadat zijn boek uitgekomen is, nog een aflevering met hem opnemen. Gewoon omdat ik het super gaaf vind.
Winstoptimalisatie.
Dankjewel en tot de volgende.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar de Erno Hanning Show op ernohanning.nl.